Hello, homies. Would you like to get your next order of homeopathic remedies for free? Then sign up to become an affiliate of Eugenie Kruger Homeopathy by visiting eugeniekruger.com/affiliates. You will receive an affiliate code, which you can give to your friends and family. They can then use your code when they purchase products at eugeniekruger.com and they will receive 5% off their first order. The best part is that you will receive 5% of whatever they purchase through our site for their first year. This will go as a store credit on your account. So when you're ready to stock up on our amazing remedies and other products, your credit will be sitting there waiting for you. How amazing is that? So check out www.eugeniekruger.com/affiliates. Right now in Australia, the state of Victoria is having their elections until 26 November. Victorians have been through some of the longest lockdowns, restrictions, and mandates in the world, all because medical authorities would not allow proven natural prevention and treatment options to be used against COVID. Don't allow this to happen again. For freedom, prosperity, and health, vote one for Dr. Isaac Golden and the Health Australia Party team. To find out more, listen to episode 126 of this podcast or visit www.healthaustraliaparty.com.au.
Welcome to the Homeopathy Hangout podcast, where we discuss all things homeopathy from around the world. And now, your host, Eugenie Kruger.
Hello, everyone, and a very warm welcome to Homeopathy Hangouts. Today, we are hanging out with homeopath Rita Cara Robinson. Welcome, Rita.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
It's very exciting to be chatting with you. You've got some very exciting topics that I know you specialize in, and I can't wait to start delving into that. But before we do, can you tell our listeners how you first discovered homeopathy?
Oh, this was such a long time ago now. So with my eldest, it was my eldest child, and he had newborn eczema. And I'd gone to the doctors, I'd gone to skin specialists, and nobody could help me. I tried all what the doctors prescribed, and then I was looking at everything, you name it, every cream to chamomile tea bags on the back of his legs. And then there was a really big bookshop here, and it had an alternative medicine a section, and there was a book on homeopathy, and I got really lucky because there was a remedy there, and I thought, I'm going to try this, and I'd never taken homeopathy before, and it worked. It sorted his eczema out in 3 days.
Wow. So you self-prescribed that?
Yes, but I just want to make it clear that I got lucky.
I was going to say that's lucky
there, right? So I'm always telling people, don't self-prescribe for chronic because you're just going to be wasting time. I got really lucky, really lucky there. But then look what's happened to that moment. The ripples have just totally... The ripples in the pond have moved out so far, even as far as Australia, New Zealand, to the other side of the world. I now see clients from there. So that moment was hugely significant for many people, not just me.
And so how did you then decide to become a homeopath yourself?
Right. So I started seeing a homeopath, and I taught primary school about 20 years, and I really wasn't enjoying it for the same reasons many teachers are leaving the profession. And I thought, well, what else am I going to do? And I was on maternity leave with my second, and I went to see a homeopath, and I kept asking him loads of questions. And I think one of the questions I asked, which homeopaths will find quite funny, is, do you always prescribe calc carb to all babies? It's like, is that just standard procedure? And he said, oh, listen, you ask a lot of questions. I think you should have a look at the course that's starting in September. I think this would be really good for you. I said, well, I am looking for something else to do. I said, but I can't commit to 4 years. He says, it's at the weekend. Everything fitted in. It wasn't too far. My husband could drive my baby to breastfeed at lunchtimes, everything fit. And so that's how that came about.
you've just suddenly made me have a flashback. I forgot my husband had to do that as well on our weekend, because we also did weekend courses for the 4 years. And yeah, my husband had to drive him in for breastfeeds. I completely forgot about that until you've mentioned that now. But yeah, we somehow make it work, don't we?
Yes, I think if it's meant to be, it'll fit, won't it?
Absolutely.
Alignment and all that.
Mm-hmm. So tell me about the types of clients that you see in your clinic. I know you have some areas that you specialize in. Can you share that with our listeners?
Okay, so I think it started off, okay, this all started off because I had to have a niche and I had to make it work. So I think there's two types of homeopaths, really. There's those that really want to do something, but they don't have to have it as a job. And then there's those homeopaths that start and they have to pay the mortgage and they have to feed their kids on this job. And I was doing it local, and it's not really, what can I say? This town isn't really into alternative medicine, let's say that. So I thought, God, this can take me ages to this can take me ages to build up my business. And then I was looking at niching, and I met another homeopath. He niched in autism. I thought, right, well, there's got to be something out there that people need, which doctors can't fix very easily, and there's lots of clients. And one thing led to another, and I ended up treating Gardasil injured patients, but this was a long time ago. This is before Facebook is what it is now. People were really using Facebook. If you had a problem, you would find your group really easily, because there'd only be maybe two or three groups with that name of the problem. So it was a really great place. So luckily I was at the right place at the right time. And being vaccine injured myself as a baby and from the BCG vaccine, that really resonated with me. One of my children is vaccine injured. And I just had so much passion, and I learned about Gardasil injury. So then I thought, right, let's go with this. And so I ended up specializing in Gardasil injury. And then from that, it went to autism, because many autistic children are vaccine injured. Mm-hmm. So then I just see the mothers then, and I see the siblings. So it then branches out, doesn't it?
It does.
So that's when my journey started, but I don't actually specialize in Gardasil anymore. I love dealing with autistic children and mothers. That's my passion now.
What do you enjoy about it, and can you share some cases with us?
Yeah, what do I enjoy? The thing I enjoy is, there's a real buzz from doing your follow-up and hearing that children's brains are starting to make a connection. So I think what we're doing as homeopaths, as a group, is we're making the unbelievable happen. Because if you think that a child has just stopped talking and stopped understanding, that's intense brain damage, which modern medicine has got nothing for. So we're doing the unthinkable. So then the simplicity of giving a sugar pill and then hearing that, it's the emotional stuff, really, hearing the mother say, oh, he called me mother for the first time, or I'm now watching my child play with his brother or sister. They've never engaged before. That's intense emotion. And I just get a massive buzz out of those follow-ups. I think it's a bit like, you know, why people perform on stage for the applause, that buzz. I get that from my mum.
Yes. Yes.
And the text and their excitement. I feel their excitement. I really understand that it's a really big deal to them. The small things are the big things. So that's that.
And it's amazing when the teachers comment as well. And quite often the parents might not necessarily tell the teacher that they're sending the child to a homeopath, but suddenly, you know, they come in for the follow-ups. And I often say, you know, has the teacher made any comments? And then they will say, oh, yes, the teacher sent me an email and said, whatever you're doing, keep doing it. You know, what's different? He's just, you know, they're communicating so well. They're engaging. You know, the educational assistant that used to have to be with them all throughout the school day is now twiddling her thumbs and has nothing to do. So Yeah. That's when you really know when it's not just the family, when it's outsiders that start to comment. I'm sure you see a lot of that as well.
Oh, yes, totally. And often you'll probably get the same. Oh, you know, there's been no change. There's been no change after this 8 weeks. And I think we're all at homeopaths at the start. You kind of panic. You think, oh, my God, that was such a good prescription. Why didn't it not work? And now I don't even flinch. When someone says that, I said, okay, don't worry, let's go through everything. The fine-tooth comb. Oh, I forgot about that. Oh, my gosh, yeah, I forgot they were doing that. Yeah, that has stopped. That's good too, right? But you've got to have perspective. And that only comes with time from doing it, to have that, not panic when someone says nothing's changed. And their expectations are so enormous. There has to be a lot of dialogue, I feel. That's the kind of thing you don't always have to have with your other patients. We're working with autistic children. Parents have to have realistic expectations that you're not really going to bring back speech in one session. Mm-hmm. And I tell them, if I could do that, I'd be charging you $10,000.
And do you know what? They would probably be willing to pay 10 times that to have their child speak, because that satisfaction you have when the mum says, you know, he said, Mum, he said, I love you. You know, it's really priceless.
It is. It's those moments that are priceless. So, yeah, expectation is very important, I think, when you're working with this.
And what you're saying about expectation is something that I feel is quite a funny one. People will go to the same doctor over and over and over again without any real results, and they won't complain about it, but they'll come to a homeopath or any natural health practitioner for that matter and expect an instant cure. So I do think that the expectation is not really weighted properly, because they will expect us to cure it straight away, but they will go back to the same doctor even with a wrong diagnosis, or, you know, pharmaceutical medication which is giving them side effects, and somehow they will keep going back. But often I feel we only get one chance.
Yeah, I totally agree. I have a bit of empathy with them, because then I remember back to when I went to my homeopath first time for a long-term complaint, and I expected there to be a massive shift in one session, especially when you're not in the UK. We have the NHS where it's free, so I was paying for this, and we don't pay for healthcare. So for me to pay quite a bit of money for a session, I was expecting that much. I don't know. In ratio of what I spent back in healing
results,
and when that didn't happen, there was a little suspicious. Oh, are you just dragging this out? So I do think people will think that way, but unless we have to, as homeopaths, realize that those patients are not in the same place as we are. And as homeopaths, when we've been doing this for so long, it's so easy, isn't it, to forget what it's like not to have this knowledge, to only have seen the doctor. I have such a narrow view of health and expectations that I got used to trying to keep and having to repeat. And having to, so you think you've told them all right, you're on board, you've got realistic expectations, still they'll come back with the wrong expectations. So sometimes you also have to realize you have to keep repeating this till the penny drops. And
absolutely.
Then they're on board for life then, aren't they?
They are. And it's such a different mindset anyway, the pharmaceutical model to holistic wellness, because we look at the whole, you know, mental, emotional, spiritual. What was your pregnancy like? What was your preconception like? Were there any shocks or traumas during your pregnancy? What was the birth like? You know, the types of questions that we ask is just so holistic. Whereas, and the whole way that we approach health and well-being is completely opposite. So if you're coming from a medical model, which most of us did, I certainly was raised with pharmaceutical medicine and came upon homeopathy by chance, as many of us did, and it's a real mind shift. You really have to change your paradigm and your way of looking at life.
Yes, what you said there about, you know, asking about medical history and pregnancy and labor. When I see that my autistic clients, sometimes that is the first time the mother has been asked about the birth. Often the birth has been extremely traumatic. Lots of medicines in pregnancy and during labor and after. And it's the first time they've been asked with such an importance put on that moment, and it's so therapeutic. And I think in that moment, there's an intense connection between the practitioner and the patient, because you're going into such a sacred place for that mother. And I think at that point, mothers really realize what's going on. I think so much happens in that moment. They also, I think so many light bulbs go on when they think, she's asking me about this. This is really important. No one's asked me about this. Gosh, I really do think this has had an impact in my child. And if the doctors haven't asked me, this has got to be the way to go. So much happens intensely in those minutes of discussion on many levels. Isn't that lucky? We get to do that.
It's amazing. And also, don't you feel that intuitively as mothers, we have a special instinct? But unfortunately, in today's society, it often gets suppressed, and we get told that what we feel about what our baby is doing or their development or our pregnancy is not real or it's imagined. And so a lot of that instincts that we have naturally as mothers end up getting suppressed. And so then when you come to a homeopath and they're asking you these questions which resonate with your own intuition, often these mothers feel a huge relief because they're finally like, yes, I knew that that car accident I had in my pregnancy, which caused such a shock, could possibly be why my child now has autism, or that medical intervention during the birth is what's possibly causing this. But the doctors laughed it off, or medical professionals laughed it off. And now here you are talking to me about it and saying that this all forms part of the picture. And it's such a huge relief for a lot of them because we believe them.
Yeah, that's so true. I have a question on my questionnaire, especially for the children with autism. And I say, when did this start? And they'll say when they got the diagnosis, or some of the doctors said. So that'll often be 12 months, 1.5, or about 3 years old when they start school. Okay. Then I say, when did you see problems? And they'll say 2 months, 4 months. And that changes your prescription completely, right? Because then you're looking, wait a minute, it's either the first vaccines, it's formula milk, it's labor meds, it's pregnancy. Your whole shift goes from 3 years old, just by that, the mother's instinct saying, it was early on, is crucial, isn't it?
It really is. I'm wondering, Rita, are you able to share some cases for us from your clinic? Let's face it, everyone loves a good story. Have you got some stories you can share with us?
I was thinking, right, what was the first story that comes to mind? I think that one of the most impactful for me was one of my early cases. There was a girl who came to me. I don't actually see anyone in my clinic anymore. It's just one long desk now that just gets piled with more stuff on. Plus having, you know, specializing in autism, it's very difficult to see a child in a room full of little bits. They start to pick everything up, which of course they will. So that wasn't working. So now I just do video call. But back then, somebody drove. They didn't even live here. They were in this region, I think, for a reason. And they drove to my house, and she was on crutches. And she ended up in a wheelchair. And I remember saying to her, I'm going to get you out that wheelchair. We're going to do this. Just hold on. And we're going to do this. And I was so determined. I thought, I'm going to get this girl out this wheelchair. And it took a few prescriptions. But also I was open. I was reading a, do you know a Japanese homeopath called, what's her name? Tarako Yui. I don't know if you've heard of her, but she's basically Mrs. Homeopathy in Japan. She has, what she's done for Japan is amazing, and she's just a genius. And I read one of her papers on HPathy website, and she was treating Gardasil girls, and she used LMs. And I'd not really used LMs. And so I thought, I'm going to dabble a little bit. Halfway through this girl's course, I thought, I'm going to try these LMs. It's amazing. So I learned about LMs, and I learned her technique, and I put hers and mine together. And I don't know how long it took, but she got out of the wheelchair and she sent me a video of her walking to the beach. Wow. And I think she's pretty much living a normal life now, gone back to school and all that.
Amazing.
So that's pretty cool, right?
That's really cool. I'm just, because this podcast is made for the general public, whenever we use terms that I think people might not be familiar with, I like to kind of pause a little bit and just explain so that our listeners can learn with us. And so Rita was just talking about LMs. Now, when you go to the health shop, you'll often see remedies that say, for example, Arnica, and it might say 6C or 30C, or you might see the tissue salts, and they're often in a 6X. So X is the Roman numeral for 10. So often it's 1 drop mother tincture to 9 drops water and alcohol diluted and succussed. And then when there's a C, it stands for centesimal, which is 100. So there's 1 drop mother tincture to 99 drops water and alcohol diluted and succussed. And the LMs that Rita's talking about is a very special range of potencies, which Hahnemann, the founder of homeopathy, talked about shortly before he passed away. And this was in his quest to try and make homeopathy as gentle as possible. And these remedies have got 1 drop mother tincture to 49,999 drops of water and alcohol, and then diluted and succussed. So they're very gentle. And it's interesting that you use those. I used to use those in my clinic. I haven't so much these days, but you find that they work really well for you?
I do. And I'm so glad you explained that, because I thought, please don't ask me to. Some people use liquid drops. Like, I don't know how to just succuss and things like that. I just straight pills. Just use this pill, take it, and be done with it.
I know that whole succussing thing in between, that was always, you know, you have to make it easy for the client because we have such busy lives. Yeah. And I try to keep it as simple as possible. And I sometimes hear homeopaths say, oh, don't eat for half an hour before and after a remedy. I'm like, nobody's going to do it if you tell them to do that. So I just get my clients to, if they have eaten, have water to clean your mouth, then have your pillule, and then wait 10 minutes or so before you eat anything else, because otherwise people are not going to do it. You have to make it easy for them to get them to be compliant.
Yeah, I totally agree. Oh, what was the question now? I've gone off on the LM.
So she sent you a video, and then she was walking towards the beach, and that's amazing. And if you have any other stories that you'd like to share, I could just sit here and listen all day.
Well, the other ones that came to mind were really simple ones, actually. So the other one that came to mind was the simplicity of, I was a newborn. It was a few weeks ago. There's a client I have, and the mother has just had a baby, and the baby had intense colic, and I don't know if your child had that. Mine did, and I'm sure many listeners can resonate. That's so stressful, having a newborn with colic and you're not sleeping anyway, and the baby can't talk. It's just a very intense, stressful situation. So I asked her, I said, have you got a kit? Yes, right. What happened? So she told me about the labor, and I suspected it was the labor meds. And she didn't have a specific labor med pill in her kit. And I said, right, Nux to clear the liver. Nux clears meds. Right, give it Nux and get back to me. And she said, within one pill, the baby was just another baby. And I love those cases because, A, you can't say it's placebo because it's a baby, right? And just the intensity of the stress that just disappears in that one moment with putting that pill on in the baby or dissolving it in water, whatever it is. Mm-hmm. It just makes you think. It's the simplicity, isn't it, that makes you think, God, how does this work? It's so amazing.
So amazing. And any other cases that you'd like to share?
You know, all the other cases, I got to say, they're all long-term. So when people want a good case, I tend to forget about them because I think it gives patients wrong expectations.
Yes.
Let's go back to college. Mm-hmm. My college taught me remedies with cases. And it would be, and this patient had all these symptoms. It was completely tarantula. They were even wearing a spider on their t-shirt or something like that, right? And it was so so obviously tarantula. Wow, that's so cool. And then you don't see those cases. They're not obviously tarantula. At the start, you're spending hours going through your books thinking, why do I get such complex cases? Is it me? Am I a bad homeopath? Where are these obvious belladonna people with the red face? You know, where are these? Where is the Nux Vomica man coming with his Porsche in my drive? Where are these people that I was taught? So those cases also, I try not to rely on them or have them stored in my memory, because then I think, that's not realistic. Cases aren't those like Hollywood fireworks cases. I have them, but I forget them because I don't think they're realistic. And then I try, when I publish my stories on my Facebook page, which I do as often as I can, I always try to say, well, this was this fourth prescription. Or this person's also doing this. I think by having realistic expectations, we will attract the right people, and we won't then disappoint others who will then go, well, I tried homeopathy, it was a load of rubbish, and I'm not going back to it. We've lost those people, haven't we? So that's why those cases don't stay in my head. Does that make sense?
It does. And so often the cases that we see, there's been so much suppression, you know, drugs in pregnancy, C-section birth, vaccinations at the moment of birth in Australia, they get Hep B and vitamin K. And then there's reflux medications, and the mum has a round of prophylactic antibiotics, and the baby has some too for good measure. So often by the time we see these cases, there's so much suppression. So the remedies really have to get in there under it all, to try to lift the vital force to start showing some progress. But in saying that, even though somebody's not going to get cured if it's a very chronic case in their first few sessions, you will always see an improvement. I've never had a case ever that hasn't had something tiny. And that's what you were saying before, is the client will say, oh, nothing's happened. But then you'll go over the case notes. Okay, so they used to have terrible night terrors. What's it like now? Oh, that's right. No, they haven't had a night terror recently. And, they used to bite their nails. How's that going? Oh, no, they're not doing that anymore. So there's always going to be shifts, positive shifts of some sort with homeopathy, I believe. But
yeah,
it's like kind of building blocks, hey? And we have to, depends where the person starts. If you start with a child that's got a very clear slate, healthy constitution, great diet, good family circumstances, there's nothing, what we call in homeopathy, a maintaining cause. So not something that their energy has to fight back against every time. Then you're going to get those miraculous cures straight away. But often that's not the case. We have kids addicted to iPads. We have them addicted to junk food. We have households that are volatile, you know, medication after medication. So the remedies have to work harder than they ever have before to really get in there and do the trick.
Yes, I really believe that they have to work harder than ever before. And that goes back to, I think, teaching and expectations. Mm-hmm. When people were teaching, they still, when they started their practices in the 70s and 80s, they're teaching us then, oh yeah, this one remedy is going to do it all. But they didn't have as many meds as we do now. And I think, so expectations and the way we prescribe has to really change for 2021 to meet our clients, because their whole medical state and history is total chaos, right? And it's heavy. So one pill isn't going to do it. And I think those stories, again, going back to what are your stories? The stories of one pill fixing everything, I think, is now detrimental to a homeopathy moving forward. For all the new people that are going to come on board, we have to change the way that we describe and the expectations, going back to what we said earlier.
Absolutely. Now, you're in the UK, and I think the experience of homeopathy is a little bit different over there than here in Australia, where it seems that nobody really knows what it is. And I don't know if you have watched Just One Drop, but obviously we had that NHMRC report that, you know, was just so detrimental to homeopathy over here. So things are a little bit different over there. I've heard your
king and the queen uses homeopathy as well for hundreds of years, and I know Prince Charles is an organic farm and he likes to use homeopathy with his sheep. So what's the scene like over there?
Yes, interesting. That is, I'm very concerned that they are our ambassadors, and I think because they are our vocal and they are our ambassadors, they're helping keep certain things behind, keep us afloat. Mm. And when that goes, I'm not sure what's going to happen. There is great difficulties here too. Until COVID, we were all having a lot of trolling on our websites, complaining, threats about, you mustn't write this on your website, you must do this. It's not law, but the people are fearful, so that was having an impact. The pharmacies are not allowed to advertise kits on their website. There are behind the scenes things going on that are making it very difficult to purchase these things. So all in all, it's not easy. It's not free for all. There are always things in the newspapers about homeopathy and negativity. I was almost trapped by a last year I was almost trapped by a journalist for a main paper, but we figured out what that was and stopped that in its tracks. It does shake you up a bit. You always feel like you're on the, you're always looking over your shoulder. It's not really relaxing. There's always something. But it's growing. You can't suppress it. Mm-hmm. It's nature, right? I always think of, when you put weed killer every year or three times a year, you got to keep putting weed killer because nature will keep coming through the cracks no matter what you do.
I love that. I've never heard that one before, but that's an analogy I'm definitely going to be using. Beautiful. And homeopathy has been suppressed so many times over the past 200 years, and every time it has come back. And we've talked about that in the previous podcast as well. But, there used to be homeopathic hospitals all over the world, and then the American Medical Association squashed a lot of that happening. But homeopathy is still here. It's still alive. It's 500 million people use it worldwide. I believe it's just going to be getting stronger and stronger because, unfortunately, viruses and bacteria are always going to mutate. They're always going to find a ways around vaccines and antibiotics and things like that. And homeopathy doesn't have that problem. It's not something that can become, bugs can't become resistant to homeopathy because that's just not how it works. So I really feel it's a modern medicine. It's a medicine for our time. It's actually it's a medicine for now, but also for the future. It's sustainable. It's safe. There's just so many good things about it. It's affordable. I could go on and on. Yeah. But I'm preaching to the converted. What type of vaccine reactions do you see in your clinic, Rita? What sort of things do the mums tell you?
Okay, so if we take the Gardasil, because that was easier, that specific one had, I saw 10 main reactions. A chronic fatigue, seizures, blood pressure problems, heart palpitations, period issues. So there was a main 10. And then you really clearly see it's what is that person's weakness. So if they've always had headaches, those headaches then would become chronic or get more intense. So you've got two things going on. What is specific to that vaccine, and then what is generally, what is happening for that individual. So that impacts people finding healing. Because if they think, oh, my symptoms aren't in that top 10, it can't be that. Then it comes back to education, doesn't it? It's what that reaction is personally for you. So that was that one. But generally speaking, in the children, a lot of it is the typical autism symptoms of not understanding, not being present, speech, losing their speech. That is the biggest thing. And I think that is what I try to talk about the most. because it means the most to the mothers. So yeah, that really.
And I guess the thing with childhood vaccinations is that the kiddies are so little when they're getting it. So, you know, 2, 4, and 6 months, 1 year, they can't tell you that yesterday I was feeling fine and today I don't feel great and this is hurting and that's hurting. But with the Gardasil vaccine, the girls are 12, 13 years old usually. So
yeah,
it's much exactly. easier for them to explain how they're feeling. And then often those symptoms are just put down to, oh, you're just a teenager, you're just being hysterical. So, you know, it's a bit of a tricky one. I just want to make it super clear that we're not saying to anyone, don't vaccinate. We're not anti-vaccination. We're just talking about the clients who come to our clinic who tell us that their child has been affected by vaccinations, and we're just here to help. So we would never ever say to not vaccinate. We're just saying some people have reactions and we are here to help when they do.
100%. I say it all the time. Someone asked me yesterday, they think that their child is vaccine injured. Oh, do you think I should do this, do that? I said, I'm not here for that. I said, that you are a parent. That is your decision. There is plenty of information out there. Do that. I'm just here to fix whatever problems mm-hmm. you have. I'm not here to advise. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't want anyone advising me parenting my child. That's my business. So absolutely, I also make that clear all the time.
Mm. And Rita, do you have any advice for families who might be listening to this podcast that might have a child who they believe has a vaccine injury? Have you got any advice for them, for the families with children with autism? You know, it can be so hard on the families on dealing with all these additional needs. So what sort of advice do you have, and what else would you like to share with our listeners?
Okay, so I would say go with your instinct, as we said before. Don't wait for a diagnosis. By waiting for an official diagnosis, you are wasting precious time. I always say, if you can bring me a child 3 and under, we tend to be able to heal them completely in a few sessions. Mm. It's so easy. The groove isn't deep. But if you wait because you don't want to hear that they've got a label, well, that label is useless anyway. To me, as a practitioner, that label is useless. Because what you're doing is you're waiting for someone to say, yeah, there's something wrong with your child. We're not sure what it is. Autism is an umbrella term for hundreds of symptoms anyway. Autism is just saying there's something wrong with your child. So why are you waiting for that diagnosis? You know there's something wrong. Just get on with it. The only reason that diagnosis is useful later on is to get one-to-one support at school. And even now, especially in the UK, you're not automatically eligible for help. The money for one-to-one support in school is a pot with X amount of money in it, and everyone has to fight for it.
Mm.
So it's not like that's a given. Mm. So that's the only reason that I think our label is useful, because that's the only way you'll get support. But apart from that, just get on with it. Just... like going back to when the mother said, I knew there was something wrong at 2 months, 4 months, then do something now. Do not wait. The doctors are telling them, oh, they might grow out of it. But they might not. Just deal with it. Just heal it straight away. You'll save mm-hmm. so much bother. The second thing I'd say is don't suppress fevers. If I could see a world where all those fevers weren't suppressed, how many cases would we have saved, prevented from turning into full-blown autism?
Mm.
Now, there is a really good website in Australia. I think it's the Australian Children's Hospital, which I use all the time, and I send them that link. And it tells, it's the doctors in the hospital saying, don't suppress a fever. Just let it go. But obviously, if they're listless, and they're staring into space, and as a mother's instinct, you know there's something wrong. You take them to the doctor or A&E or ER, whatever you call it there, emergency services. But if they're playing Lego and they're all right, just sit with them, cuddle them, know it's going to be a long night. You will save them having to have antibiotics in a few days, because it'll be over in 24 hours. So that's the other thing. And the third thing I'd say is, don't rely on pills. Don't rely on homeopathy. It is diet related. It's sleep related. how can I get my child to recover quick? Diet is the first thing. Oh, my child is very fussy. Okay, we'll start homeopathy, but don't give up. Keep giving the child new foods. Because when they're working with a homeopath, they're going to start trying new foods. So they didn't like cucumber last year, then don't not give them that ever again. Give it to them, give it into different ways, you know, different shapes, different cook it, cook this, puree that, you know. Mm-hmm. Diet is key. And I've never, ever had any of my patients fully recovered and off the label without the mother putting diet as their priority. Mm. They've all had excellent diets. And I make that clear because we're not magicians. We can do magic, but we can't create miracles where, you know, we're just on our own, just having to give pills. Like you said before, they've got to be going to bed on time. Mm-hmm. A child that's going to bed by themselves at 12:30, 1:00, we're not going to get anywhere. And you can't rely on pills for that. You have to be a parent and stuff. And so their hormones are all becoming more balanced. And so they're my key things that I would say to parents.
Another big one I always find is the iPads, because I do have some clients come into the clinic and most of mine are online, but you have the children with autism that come in here with their iPad glued to them and just in their face. And I understand that sometimes the parents need to have the iPad on in the consultation room so we can speak, but then they tell me that these kids go to sleep with it. And I'm like, well, nothing is going to change unless you remove the technology, because it is actually causing chemical imbalances in their brain. And if you don't even have to do the homeopathy, you have to do nothing else. Just get rid of the technology or at least reduce it, and that will make a massive difference in itself.
Yes, 100%. That is something that I think you, I, and other homeopaths are going to have to deal with all more and more, is the iPad. I make it clear, that is not a spectrum issue. That is a neurotypical child of 2021 parenting issue. My child would be on the iPad all night until I tell them to take it off. If they come off the iPad, they want to go then on the phone.
Yeah.
That's what we have to deal with. Issue, right? So, yeah, I am very clear about all of that stuff. I don't beat around the bush. Because they're coming to get their child healed. And if that's what it takes, we have to be direct. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, I feel they're wasting their money. So don't blame me. Yeah. I'm telling you this is how it is. And follow it. If you don't follow it, then I know it's not me and it's not my pills. Mm-hmm. So I think we all have to say, right?
You have one of the best logos ever. You can heal. I'm in your corner. I love it. I get goosebumps every time I read it. I was quickly going to ask you something, Rita, because we're almost at the end, but you said something that's so important. And I'm just always have this mother in my mind who's new to homeopathy, who's listening to this podcast and might be thinking, oh, they said that thing. What did they mean? So I always try to clarify it as much as possible. You said about suppressing a fever. And I just thought maybe you can clarify that for people that might not know what you mean about suppressing a fever and why it's important not to.
Okay. So this is how I explain it to my mum's first time. Right. So when a child has a fever, the body is increasing the temperature in order to make the white cells, which are like the body's army, go and fight the infection. So when you bring the temperature down with a paracetamol, you're then telling the white cells to be quiet and go home and stop fighting. So the fever is not the problem. The fever is just telling you that something's going on. If you suppress it with medicine, the fever will come back the next day because the child's body is working. That is not broken. If you then go for the second day, the fever might even go even higher and the parent is then more scared. If you suppress it again, if you think it's now 2 days worth of bacteria or virus spreading, by the third and fourth day, it's game over. The body is now given up on the fever. There is too much virus or bacteria now. You will have to go and get antibiotics. Mm. And when you get antibiotics, there's a really good, what's his name? This guy who talks about the gut. I can't think of his name now. Anyway, he's a scientist. And He says that the body never goes back to ground zero after your first dose of antibiotics in your life. So what will then happen is more likely that that virus or bacteria will rear its head again in a few months, in 6 months, a year or so, because you never healed the source. You never healed the real problem. People do worry about seizures, and that's why that they give. But then go to the Australian website, because it's got a really great thing about seizures on there, and alleviating mothers' fears. The other thing I'm saying is you're not doing nothing. You've got a homeopathy kit. So it's not like you're being a bad mother, in inverted commas, or neglecting your child. You're using homeopathy. But then with that, you must have the expectation that you're not trying to bring the fever down. The fever needs to be there to fix. And if you let it go, it'll be over in 24 hours. Job done. But the homeopathy will help the child feel more comfortable. So maybe less teary, less clingy. It will help. And also help the virus and bacteria.
And once you can explain that to a mother of the reason behind it, and take that fear out of a fever and make them understand it's actually a normal physiological thing that's happening in the body. Your body is so intelligent and it's actually just trying to create homeostasis and balance itself, and make them understand that, it really helps. Dr. Suzanne Humphreys said that suppressing a fever with medication is like shooting your guard dog when it's trying to warn you of an intruder. And I thought that was quite good. And the other analogy I like to use with fevers is that it's maturing that child's immune system. And so I liken it to, if your child is trying to learn to walk, every time they get up to try to learn to walk, you pick them up and say, oh, no, you're going to fall over and get hurt. That child's never going to learn to walk. And I feel like a fever is the same thing. Every time you suppress that fever with paracetamol or something like that, that immune system's not actually getting an opportunity to mature and to learn and to fight the bad guys and then create immunity and memory to this and mature properly. So
all of that, I couldn't have said that better myself.
So just as something a little light to finish off on, Rita, what are your top three personal remedies for yourself and why? Your three favorites?
That's easy. Okay, so I'd say Nux Vomica. Oh, who doesn't love a Nux? It's so brilliant, right? Oh, God, love Nux. Especially if, you know, you've been out or you've had a party, you know, or it's Christmas and you think, oh, God, I just ate so much. And now I'm not going to sleep and I'm going to be up in the night. And you just take a Nux. Oh, it's instant relief. I love that. So versatile. Nux is one. For me, gel semium, because I have not great adrenals. And it has been amazing for me. When I've needed it, it really pulls through. Yeah, gel semium. You just know when you get that little jittery and you're exhausted. And it will get me through the day if I have to do something. So say I'm really tired and got a day of clients. It's just my little helper. It's my pal. It's really great. And the other one, what's the other one? Oh, sulfur. Sulfur is just, again, it's so versatile. I love sulfur because it does so much for so many people.
It does.
It's great, isn't it? I love it.
It's such a simple remedy, and it's so, so profound. It just always blows my mind. It's just such a simple remedy. It's been around for over 200 years, and it's just so many things that it can help with.
Yes, and if you ever fix a child that's waking in the night with sulfur, they love you. I mean, you know, because you've sorted the mum out, haven't you?
Absolutely. I just had one of those cases today and the mum's like, oh, he's sleeping so well. I feel like a new person. It just really helps the whole family, doesn't it?
Exactly.
Yeah. So Rita, how can people get hold of you? Where can they engage with you? How can they book? Where do they find out more about you?
Okay, so everything is under my name. So if you type Rita Cara Robinson with a K into Google, my website will come up. So there's a contact page there. Or that is my email address, ritacarrobson@gmail.com is my email. I have the same name on Facebook. A lot of people find me on Facebook. You can send me a message there. Yeah, that's how you get contact me. Don't call me, please. My phone is always off because I'm always in calls. And I don't listen to voicemails. Don't call me.
I've been following your Facebook page for a couple of years now, and I love reading your stories. You share really great information on your Facebook page.
Thank you so much. I always wonder, how do people find me? So that's really nice to know. Thank you so much.
Yeah. Well, I can't thank you enough for your time. I know you've got a client straight after this, so I'm not going to hold you up any longer. I hope you have a wonderful day, and thank you so much for sharing your time with us.
Thank you. It's been a real pleasure. Thanks so much.